Cowan's Rail 2. You arrived at Willington and said that you were in a hall, a church hall.
Yes. Was it?
And this is still winter, isn't it? Which was a pretty severe winter, 1940. How were you able to keep warm?
With a gigantic stove in the middle of the, what they call the outhome of the Wesleyan's Chapel, where they have all their functions. And had a great big fire in the middle, cool fire in the middle. That's how it was really warm.
And you'd be responsible for keeping that the hall clean?
Oh, yes. Certain areas to keep clean. And there's a man, did it every day to go around with a brush and different things like that. And the abolition just was there as well. That two places where you could get washed in this little place, you know, washing shape and that.
And this was within the building itself?
One was outside the building, one was inside the building, so that it was both.
Did you have to keep the stove clean, as they do in the army?
Oh, yes, you got to keep everything clean, yes. As I said, there's a man detailed every day. As soon as you got his breakfast, or as you go for breakfast, get a cut and then go to it, and the man detailed to come back to do that. And then we got on a different thing, and what we hadn't got, not detailed that. But the whole first day, that's all we're doing, was a really different thing. And all different places and pick up different parts of stuff for what they wanted. Until it comes to the second day, we started, we used to go for all the breakfast. It's a march. There was about three companies in Wilton, and this was spread out. And we should all dine in the same dining hall. It was a curry's big hall itself, it's dance hall, and all in the big feed area, you see. You should go there at Hamburg meetings and come back.
Did you march there or just make your own way there?
We marched there. I mean, we didn't have very far to go. It was just around the corner, but this is marched from the away outset and the far corner of Wilton up a 40 hour battalion. Our company was just next door to Albert, was next door to the feeding place. We didn't very far to go.
How many men were there in the hall with you?
There was a platoon of 20. So about 20 men, 21 men, I think. It was big enough.
Did it have a name or a number, your particular platoon? How was it identified?
I think it had a number. Platoon so-and-so. I can't remember the name, but it was a platoon, yes. Because the different platoons, as I say, was part of all the place. But we knew where we had to go and everything, keep it clean.
At what point did you have the medical? That happened at Bransworth?
Yeah, I had the medical at Bransworth.
Was it a pretty searching medical?
Yes. Yeah. And then we had another one later on at Wellington, about a week after that. A check-up, make sure.
Were the palliasses comfortable?
Well, they weren't comfortable as you get used to them. There's nothing comfortable in straw, filled with straw. But we got used to them. I'm surprised how easy. They had the odd soldier complaining about this and everybody got complaints from all over the place. I felt sorry for the sergeant. We had a good sergeant. And he said, talk to him, first of all, just like an ordinary human being, even though he's a regular, you could tell that he wasn't going to be a tough sergeant, but he was going to be a thorough sergeant. He knew his job. And he said, try and quieten the platoon down. And he complained, he's still saying. But, on the whole, he was very, very good.
What was his name?
I think myself to call him Robson. I'm not quite sure. I think I called him Robson.
Was he an old First World War soldier?
He was a regular soldier, yes. Regular soldier.
The people who formed the platoon with you, what were they like?
Well, they were quite good, except you got a couple of working tickets, but they were quite good. Yeah.
Working your ticket, by that you mean they were trying to get out?
Options for that, yeah. Nothing would suit them. You couldn't be in them. They were awkward, that's why I say awkward. But most of the two were quite good, nothing to do with it, you know.
Were there any bullies or bullying going on?
Oh, you form one or two bullies, yeah. Try to be tough, but. We had, I don't think we had one out, maybe two hours, we were very fortunate. We have one children now, but we're not with all. I can't remember what now, but we didn't have any much. But we got put on the charge for different things, what we didn't do, you know. Such as we had trouble in the dining hall one morning. Everybody complained because they hadn't got any butter. And they had butter and it was last 9 days and they couldn't get butter in any case. But I said, they took it out there on the regular NCOs and everybody that was in the dining hall was confined to barracks for that night. So you can imagine that the lads were down to get out to see the people in the world and get to a few pubs in the line and unicorn and whatnot. And there was a few charges the next day because they had run out and the regiment and police had caught them. So we were regiment and police then. We didn't know what the regiment police meant then. We didn't know what they meant, what they were doing, but we found out.
We'll discuss that in the future. You said there were the trouble. Was it just complaints or was any? What form did the trouble take?
There was always complaints. You know, in the dining hall, one day there was some complaint. The porridge was too cold or the porridge was too thick. There was always complaints. You couldn't start to give them out the complaints. There was different people.
Did you have a duty officer that was coming around to ask you if you can complain?
There was an ordinary corporal, an ordinary sergeant, and an ordinary officer. And when he sat down, and then got the hat, well, so far through your meal, is to come around to each table if there's any complaints. And I think anybody that's ever been in the army would know that there's always a complaint from some part area. But it was always smooth where it is.
But the complaint of that nature would be accepted.
Oh yes, accepted. It was noted and accepted, and somebody was going to bother later on. So we didn't actually take notes of them days. We just should take notes of our own platoon and make sure that our own platoon was all right.
You said the platoon had its sergeant. This gentleman you mentioned, and were the corporals, lance corporals, under him? You can't remember his name. But again, was he okay towards you?
Oh, he was a bit trying to show off, like, but I think when he got into the lads and that, I didn't get much trouble with that either. And he was all right to finish.
Did they teach you how to look after your uniform and equipment?
Oh yes, yeah, I mean you got your clean material with you when you joined up at Bansworth. You got your polish, you got your button hook, and your brushes. As a matter of fact, I've still got my hairbrush to that day in this house now. I'm using it now, my hairbrush.
What tricks were you taught on keeping things particularly clean?
I knew one trick from when I was young. I always fold my own trousers up and put my trousers in the bed and sleep on them. And that was one trick they wanted to get to show you there. They had to keep your trousers really good. And if you've got any damage, you wish you, when you got the wound, you wish you were another kit, denim kit, what they put on for when you're wounding and doing tours and whatnot, you put on for the dress you got from Brands was a sort of dress kit. So you had this other set of uniform, denim uniform, what you put on for sort of the dress now. So you should try and keep them as clean as you. But if anything were gone wrong and you messed up, you always should send them to the quartermaster to get them cleaned. You see, if we're not on the other side, you get them sent to the quartermaster to get them cleaned. And no problem there.
Cleaning your webbing, how was that done?
Well, we should do it with soap. You rub on it. You should wash it down. But actually, you should wash it every day. That was one of the things you washed every day.
So you washed it and then you put the blanco, was it?
On it, that was it. Hand over dry, and they wouldn't say there's something like that. But that was a daily routine. If you respect yourself, your kit, you used to do your whole kit every day, you're packing everything. That was what the sergeant sort of told you, to be able to sew this, to keep your kit, get nice and clean. That. Your shoes, you used to sit and polish them at night time, going out with boot polish in the back of a toothbrush. I had a toothbrush, which is right in the front with a toothbrush.
This was the spit and polish technique,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, the shoes are nicely cleaned at all times.
You say you got a rifle at Bransworth. Was it in a greasy condition? Was it just out of the stores?
Yeah, it was in greasy condition, but I had the second day and the third day where I got what they call rifle lessons, and we had to have it cleaned down, take the grease off, make sure the boat was all right, and look through the aperture and see if that was all right, and get the old pull through and get it pulled through then. And that was the thing we should do every day. You know, if you had any respect, you should look at your rifle every day, which we were told to do.
Were there regular kit inspections?
Oh, yeah. There was a kit inspection every day by a sergeant, and you never knew when the officer, the platoon officer was coming. We had a platoon officer, it was nice, but he could be strict, really strict.
Do you remember his name?
And he called him Scott. I think he was a sergeant major when he got promoted. I think he was a called him Scott. But the commanding officer was, I forget the commander's ship chaser, something. I'm not quite sure the commanding officer.
You would have to lay out your kit in a certain way, did you not?
Oh, yes, uniformity. Had to be a certain style, otherwise, you should try to get your kit done over again.
So, every day with having this kit inspection by NCO or officer, you'd lay your kit out. As part of the morning routine,
Every day routine. When you made your bed up, you made your kit up.
And then the kit inspection, what happened? How did they do it?
Well, they should come and tell you there. You should take all your clean, what you had in your kit bag, clean and put on from your bed on the bed.
And you had to stand beside it?
Oh, yes.
If you had any equipment or that had been lost, what was the procedure? Or stolen?
The Lance Corps to take it, the effects and whatnot. If you lost a really cord, well, you put on the charges and, you know, the MBS. But if the Lance Corps put on and you put it through the sergeant, you should go to the CQMS and they should tell you when you're going to get a new one. If you lost it.
And did you have to buy the new one? Buy the replacement?
You should buy this, yes.
Was there much stealing?
A bit. There was quite a bit in the company itself, but different stretched out a bit, you know. I mean, we had one or two things stolen in the platoon, but you occasionally found out what was doing it, you know. Of course, somebody was putting the charge in that saline and whatnot. What was a great deal with it.
Launched into a man's world, and a highly disciplined man's world, how did you settle to it?
Well, I think I said I'm doing very well myself, but you know, it was a bit harder in the first week or something. The marching up and down the side of the creek, it was still snowing and whatnot. I said, and I had to go on guard only there 5 days, and I started doing guards, and I hadn't been stood to attention for tours in my life before, so I had to get used to it. But I think I got my temps to remain very well. The only part was when I had two guards, you know, send two and four off and whatnot. But it came to. And I say within 5 weeks, I mean, I must have been doing something right because I was picked to go back to breakfast on a course. So we must have been doing something right.
Can you take me through the very early drills that you were taught, the very, very first one?
The first drill was how to line up and get in the line and start marching, reverse marching descent. The marching was your first thing. Even before you got marching with your rifle, the march is really hard to march up and down the streets. I mean, the people working were very, very good. We used to march up and down the streets, and it's sergeant or corporal was with you, shouting, warning, up and down. And the people just stand there and they should laugh. But they were great, great loving women. There's a pit there, but they were great, great people. And night times, they used to take you to their homes and give you supper and whatnot, and ready out the tea and everything. It was really, you couldn't follow the people working at all.
Was the basic army language a bit of a shock to you?
Well, it was in a way, yeah. I never knew so much, little too much, like, with them days. Because, I mean, as I say, being a chapel lad, I never said he'd be much far down the chapel. Not as much as it was, anyway. So it came a bit of a shock, but we got used to it. And he didn't use it much. So the day, because if you were heard by a corporal or sergeant, whatever that, you're put straight under charge for using bad language.
And yet they would use it to you.
No, they never used bad language to us. And she was never used by them as a snow. No. If they did, they would report as well. But no, they never used by them, they're very good. As I say, the odd private issue come up with it occasionally. And he was warned. That was once you got a warning, that was it. Next time you put in a shower. So I think they realised it at the time. They were going to get nowhere, so they didn't keep to order, you know. So we eventually finished it with a good platoon.
Did you go straight into the light infantry pace in your marching, or did you build up to it?
Well, I built up to it, yeah. They didn't tell you straight away. I mean, you're 168 an hour and whatnot, exactly that. There's nothing else. We didn't know what it meant at first until we got one in the main streets. And then we started there. The sergeant major got his time stick out and whatnot, and sat the other, and started to measure the times. Of course, then we should learn an army tune then, so we could just sing, telling me some marching, and that was to bring you into the pace of the marching. It was quite.
But that was gradual, build up
gradual,
to.
It was gradual, yes, yeah. I didn't force it straight away, everything was gradual. And then after that, you went from different platoons to another, but to different. Different sergeants who learned different things. I mean, my sergeant was a drill sergeant, and he used to take drills every day with different platoons. I said, I wish you were to another sergeant. He said, a sergeant called Rasmussen, a regular sergeant, was a funny man, he was a great man, but we should go to him for weapon training, different things like that. You know what? Take us all the different things. It was a change, and I enjoyed it. We went through it.
Did you learn your drills and your weapon training to number?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how did that work? Did you shout out the numbers in the beginning?
You should start shouting out the numbers, which are 1-2, 1-2, depending upon what you're doing. Showing arms or inspection arms and things like this and that. But even drills where you're marching down the road, you should say, 1-2, 1-2, different. Until they got too fast at the pace, and that was it. It just went one, left. It was that fast.
So, did you march with your arms shouldered in the derms, or was it at the trail?
No, at the shoulder.
At the shoulder.
So when you used to say an officer approaching, and you're on guard, you used to shoulder arms. The trail didn't happen to the arm in the years. That was it. You used to double up your arm, actually, or double.
With the trail.
Drilling, you should double up with the armoured trail. But when you're on parade, that was one of the main. That was one of the passing out things when you're passing out for the NCOs. And drills, make my soldier arms in certain distance and clattering the butt, which I learned later on in Brunswick by some old drill people, you see. So.
Can we look at weapon training now? Using the rifle in your drills and. And of course, ultimately firing it. Was it a heavy weapon to get used to?
Well, it was a 303, the usual rifle. And it was pretty heavy. But the main weapon you had on was the Bren gun. That was a machine gun. You had one in every platoon. And you said to change the hard ball every so often in so many seconds. But. It was fun. It was fun. Actually, fun. The training to be looking after your weapon. The finish. I mean, as I said, every day you used to get close to it. You used to get maybe a half hour off for cleaning your weapons or whatever. Half hour a day. That was twice a day. So either doing your weapons or your kit. But as I said, it's only the odd look that I get pulled up about. But it was maybe just weapon up being a bit lackadaisical in his kit that we own.
And the weapon, as you say, would be inspected by the officer on parade or the NCO on parade.
Yeah.
How was that done?
Well, you took it on parade, you marched up a couple of times and then brought it back, stood to attention, and brought it back to attention again. Maybe slope arms, you see, what? Or present arms, that was a present arms. And you come, if you turn your foot like that, you just look down the barrel. After you look down the barrel, you say, check your bolt, and then your trigger, or anything. That was the main part of it, and she had cleaned them, you know. But the main part that we looked at was the barrel.
What were the various moves in parade drill with your rifle?
There was shoulder arms, present arms,
And then you bring it down to your to the ground. And you stand at ease with it thrust out. And the one where you held it in that position,
that's
vertically in front of you.
That's the present arms.
Which would be very often a ceremonial type of thing, was it?
I once lost some points in trying to be clever with that. When I was actually got to the battalion, formed the battalion that was Scotland. I tried to present arms in one moment, instead of three moments. It was a personnel parade, all different things. I had this platoon that they were fastening them out for, as I was being there for a few months. I tried to sit one moment. But he gave us a great turn off. He said, "You're very, very good at it," but he said it wasn't a move that we use these days. We tried to knock him seconds after timing for the whole drill, you know. Instead of 1-2, 1-2, this and the other. That's what I said. I said, "Scrum bombs." I said, "Stand at ease." No, of it? I just stand at ease. From the present arms, I had to do three moves, you see, and I turned it in quick time. But it was a global thing that was wrong. That didn't fool me. It's a slip up moment again, I would. You always caught out.
At what point did you get the opportunity to fire your rifle?
Well, we all went, I think it was about a fortnight or 3 weeks after, before I went down on the car, of course. We went down to Woodbourne Range. We were there for 3 days. We were there on hand grenade and the firing range. And we had 3 days in Woodbourne. Different company at the time. And we stopped down there. There's a place over there where you slept there. I think you must have seen it in Woodbourne. If you're a firing range. Yeah. That was it. We stopped there 3 days.
It's still there today, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's true. We're every year. Every territory is doing that shooting thing.
What are the ranges that you fired from?
It was anything from 300 to 1,000, 300 to 700 feet. 300, 400, 500. Right, it's a shift of the butts further back, you know. And then there was one and a half days when you weren't on the firing range. You were in the pits for throwing the grenade and whatnot.
Can you take me through not merely the ranges that you fired at, but the type of shooting that you would have to do. I'm thinking in terms of the carefully aimed, poor shooting, and then
the way you hold the rifle, the way you got the bullseye, near the bullseye, you got a little bit of fire. It was just the action of where you were holding the rifle, firing it, whether the aim field.
But you would be firing to hit the bull, as you say,
yes.
A kind of a target shooting.
Yeah, target.
And then there was did you do the drill for quick fire? And getting a group.
Yes. Oh yes, a quick fire. Exactly.
How many shots had you to get off?
Five off. So many seconds. Yeah. You said bring the ball back in quickly. Like yeah.
Was it difficult to hold the rifle steady whilst you did that?
It was very difficult. Yeah, a lot of nerve, a lot of sort of training to get it. If you want a five and a ball, yeah. Very good marksman with a five and a ball when you should fire it quick like that. No, I remember the first time I fired it. I think it was all over the board. But I had one bull and about four outers. But gradually, the more you did it, the better it got. But when you were leaning on one arm, you see, it wouldn't be so bad if you had a parapet to leave it on. But when you're on your one arm, the time your elbow got a bit shaking, and when you should be vibrating with a shake of the bull, you know, if you can make a good bolt, get a round in a bolt quick, on the
better. The parts, particularly the bolt, would have to be pretty well oiled to make a pretty free and easy movement. Were the rifles zeroed for you, or did you do that yourself?
They were supposed to be zeroed, but we just have to try and tell them that they were pumped to regulate, and they were zeroed in the armory. Just do it for you. Excuse me.
You mentioned that you did hand grenade training. How was that done?
Well, that was where you took, how many seconds you had to take the pin out, and how many seconds you had to throw it before it went off. And then closed bank in a little circle with sandbags over the top, you know. And as I said, I never saw many accidents, like, but a half seen no accidents, and quite a lot of blood. There were a lot of people, a lot of soldiers, frightened of the grenade. And when they pulled that pin out, they were frightened also. So most of them got rid of it as quick as they could. As soon as they pulled the pin out, and they didn't know where they were throwing it. And there was one or two nearly nasty accidents on the range. I'm not in your voice.
Yes, it must have been a bit hairy at the time. Hair-raising
at
the time.
Yes, it was, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you fire the Bren as well on the range?
Oh yes, yeah.
What was that like as a weapon?
Well, it was a very good weapon, actually. I liked the Bren gun. I was good at the Bren gun. I think I passed checked it with the screen. You had to get straight at a hot barrel after you find a barrel in so many seconds. Changing the barrel of the Bren gun is because when it's firing rapidly for an action, you've got to get a hot barrel. A hot barrel will explode, so you've got to change it so many seconds in case you're facing an enemy, so that you have to change the hot barrel off and put a new barrel on within so many seconds. I think the time was 7 seconds. So if you press 7 seconds, you're running. Because you could fumble the screws and all different things to turn and whatnot. To get it right, you should get it right in, you have to push it in, get it right. So 7 seconds is quite a good time to get it in.
How long would it last in a firing situation before that might happen?
Well, I think he said that the chap that was firing the Bren gun, he realised while the way it was firing, it was slowing down, it was getting too hot about it. And that's when he would know that it was firing.
So the Bren gun would have a spare supply of barrels, in effect.
Yeah, yeah.
How many would the usually carry with them?
Well, I mean, it's like, I'm not saying that the barrels should have a long time, because you never set fire on a Bren gun for long, so in bursting this and the other, so it would last maybe hours. But you had to be a spot on in case it had to be changed. It might have gone wrong after so many rounds, but you had to be spot on in case it changed it straight away, see? So it didn't interfere with firing.
What was the Bren gun's strength as a weapon?
Well, it was so light and so easy to carry, and it used to fire so many, I forget the number of rounds a minute. In them days, it was fast, it was one of the fastest firing machine guns out. I mean, except here you had in the artillery, you had these maximum guns and whatnot. This is a further injury, this is one of the fastest firing guns out you had.
Was it accurate?
Very accurate, yes. Well, we thought it was very accurate anyway.
I've heard it criticised for its accuracy, actually. Rather than having a zone of fire, you hit what you aimed for.
Well, you can also fire this gun from the hip. As his boat, I had later experience later on in life, whereas in the road, that this gun was fired from the hip by certain blokes, and they were marvellous with it. I mean, I fired it from the hip in practice, and it was easy fire. You could do a lot of damage, but it was so light as well. Let many guns you should carry.
Were there any other weapons that you were introduced to in these early stages?
I had a Tommy gun later on as well.
Would that be later on the war, was it?
Oh, that was later on the war,
yeah. I'm thinking in terms of, you know, the initial stages. Yeah, were you introduced to any of the mortars at this early stage?
Sorry, I forgot about the mortars. Yes, we had mortar training before we there. Mortar training came in, weapons training every different days of the week. Mortar training, yes. The 2-inch mortar, yes, which was the 2-inch mortar.
What was it like?
It was quite effective. It was quite effective. If you had a good team on it, a good number two, to put the bombs in, it was quite effective. Yes, it was quite easy.
And that was classified as an infantry weapon?
Yes, it was an infantry weapon, yes. It was called a searching weapon. If you knew where the enemy was, whether it was spot on, if you could if you had somebody who could use distance. If the mortar man could do it, and the second man could use distance, it was effective, very effective.